welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you?
Good, I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Just a quick reminder that seasonal flu is caused by two types of viruses, influenza A and influenza B viruses. Although the flu is acutely disabling for most of us, influenza is a self-limited infection. Of course, there are several groups who have an increased risk of morbidity and mortality. We know who those groups are. Currently, there are two classes of antiviral drugs that are available for the treatment and prevention of influenza. You've got the neuraminidase inhibitors, which are effective against both influenza A and B, and you have the adamantines, which are only active against influenza A. This week, we're looking at a journal article published in the Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine. Mark and I were joking about it before because Mark is the senior author of it. And what I'm about to say isn't just because I'm sitting here talking with Mark, but it is a very useful article that creates sort of a decision rule to help us decide about point of care, testing, and treatment. So the question that the article attempts to ask is there an accurate clinical decision rule for guiding point-of-care testing and empiric therapy for adults who have suspected influenza? Now, usually I would say, Mark, what did the authors find? But I can say, Mark, what did you find?
Yeah, this was a lot of fun to do. And we I have been doing some work on influenza in terms of clinical diagnosis. And there were a couple of studies that looked very similar in terms of how they recruited patients and good reference standards and very typical outpatient primary care population. So I contacted the authors, Ralph Gonzalez at UCSF, who's really well known for his work on respiratory tract infections, and Nicolas Sen, who's in Lausanne, Switzerland. And I always make sure I choose collaborators who are in really cool cities. So if we do have to travel, you know, it works out well. But anyway, no trips yet, but they were great to work with, and they shared their data, and together we reanalyzed the data. We combined it and then randomly pulled out a derivation or development group that we used to do a multivariate analysis, and we came up with some potential simple clinical point scores. And then we tested those scores in the remaining 135 patients. And we found that they were quite accurate at identifying low, moderate, and high-risk groups. So basically, the best score that we found gave 2 points if someone had fever plus cough, 2 points if they had myalgias or body aches, 1 point if they presented within the first 2 days. So somebody, usually people who get sicker faster come in sooner. And then 1 point for chills or sweats. And if you add that up, people with 0 to 2 points, only 8% had the flu. 3 points, 30% had the flu. And 4 to 6 points, 59% had the flu. And so we'd also talked to physicians and said, hey, when do you stop worrying about the flu? And you know, they kind of mostly agreed, well, if it's less than 10%, I'm pretty comfortable ruling it out. And so that low-risk group falls in that area. And if they're over 50% and someone comes in within 36 hours, then they're pretty comfortable ruling it in. And if the you discuss it and the patient wants to use Tamiflu, then using Tamiflu in those folks. And in the middle, that's where you might find a role for point-of-care testing. And what I think was also interesting to me and made it more useful was two-thirds of the patients were classified by this rule as either low or high risk, so they didn't need that point-of-care test. And there was just an article in the Annals of Internal Medicine this week, I think released today, saying that the point-of-care tests are about 63% sensitive. So they'll find about two-thirds of people with flu. They're very specific, about 98%. So if they're positive, they're very helpful at ruling in. If they're negative, they're not that helpful. So I think the combination of using this clinical score first, and then only if you're in that middle risk group do you use the point-of-care test, has the potential to not only reduce the risk of not reduce the likelihood of having to use that test, but also reduce the likelihood of inappropriately treating. I mean, if all you do is just, hey, it's flu season, someone comes in with fever and cough, I'm just going to throw Tamiflu at them, you're probably going to over-treat a lot of people. So anyway, it was a fun study to do. We're working on some additional validation studies right now in a Swiss population with Nicola, and trying to do some other work in terms of turning this into a web-based point of care tool so that somebody can also use it at the point of care, and we'll be building it into essential evidence in the next couple of months.
It sounds like you have to get over to Europe to work on this. It's imperative. Hey, Mark, before we close, just a quick question on the number needed to treat. How effective are these influenza medications, particularly the neuraminidase inhibitors?
Yeah. We've been also doing, I'm about to probably later today, we'll be submitting a study that I'm just completing with colleagues here at University of Georgia, and we are doing a systematic review of the effectiveness of Tamiflu at preventing, looking at how much does it reduce the duration of symptoms, how much does it reduce complications, how much does it reduce hospitalizations. And what I found was, we found 11 studies out there, 11 well-designed, randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled studies. Three have been published. Wow. Eight have not. And we did find access to those, Roche, after the British Medical Journal, basically the Cochrane Library, retracted their initial systematic review and said, hey, they didn't make available these. There's all this unpublished data. So Roche did make it available on a website, and we downloaded these reports that are between 200 and 1,000 pages that had the original trial data. And some of those studies really should have been published. One had was the largest to date with 1,100 patients. Another one studied 400 patients who had chronic respiratory disease, and another studied 700 patients over age 65. None of those studies were published. So basically, we found interesting things. We found much less evidence, no evidence that it reduces hospitalizations. The reduction in duration of symptoms is about 20 hours, and the reduction in complications, which has been reported previously by other authors who were supported mostly by the manufacturer, we found that they had included bronchitis as a complication requiring an antibiotic. And if you threw that out, because I don't think it is I don't think bronchitis needs an antibiotic, and most people don't think they do either, then there was no reduction in complications. There's a small reduction in pneumonia risk, about 1%. So a number needed to treat of about 100. So I think the jury is still out for me on whether Tamiflu provides any kind of clinically important benefit.
Very useful, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week. Thanks so much and a good study.
All right, thanks.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.